Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Robert Lustig, who's a pediatric endocrinologist who has spent the last 16 years treating childhood obesity and studying the effects of sugar on the central nervous system, metabolism, and disease. He's the director of the Weight Assessment for Teen and Child Health Program at UCSF, Benioff's Children's Hospitals, and he's a member of the UCSF Institute for Health Policy Studies and a member of the Obesity Task Force of both the Endocrine Society and the Pediatric Endocrine Society. His latest book is Fat Chance, Beating the Odds Against Sugar, Processed Food, Obesity, and Disease. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Robert Lustig.
Thank you so much, Ian, for having me.
And do you think that this move by the American Medical Association to declare obesity a disease, which affects one-third of Americans have this disease, that's 78 million American adults and 12 million American children, costing the health system over $150 billion a year.
Oh, it's a lot more than that.
So I take it.
Especially when you throw the diabetes on top of it.
Well, that's the part of it that we should start out and kind of pass this out. How do you separate out the disease of obesity then from the obesity related diseases,
right,
like diabetes type 2, cardiovascular disease, and certain cancers?
Indeed, this is exactly the issue. First of all, let me say that the American Medical Association declaring obesity as a disease at this point in time is sort of like, you know, being late to the party. In 2004, the Department of Health and Human Services under Tommy Thompson declared obesity a disease. In fact, he went on the Today Show, you know, very specifically to talk about, to state this back then. And yet all of the medical societies were silent at the time, which really made no sense whatsoever. The reason that they're doing this now almost assuredly is because they see Obamacare coming down the pike. And so, you know, by declaring it a disease, we can actually see reimbursement now for this. That's almost assuredly the reason. The big problem here is it's not about obesity, and it never was. Here's why. 20% of obese people are completely metabolically normal. They have no metabolic dysfunction. They will live a completely normal life, die at a completely normal age, cost the taxpayer nothing. They're just fat. Conversely, up to 40% of the normal weight population have the exact same metabolic dysfunctions as do the obese. They get type 2 diabetes. They get lipid problems. They get hypertension. They get cardiovascular disease. They get cancer. They get dementia. They end up costing the medical healthcare system even more than the obese do. And they don't even know they have a problem. So to say obesity is a disease is to be actually somewhat disingenuous, because actually normal weight people have the same problems. Third reason this is a problem is because obesity is not one disease. It's many. There are many different reasons for obesity. For instance, we have patients who have Cushing's disease, which is an excess of cortisol. They get obese. On the other hand, we have kids with Down syndrome or Prader-Willi syndrome. They get obese, but for a completely different reason. There are about 60 different diagnoses that lead to obesity. To call obesity a disease is not doing it justice, and what it's suggesting is, well, if there's one disease, there must be one treatment, and we know that's not true.
So the AMA's decision will essentially make diagnosis and treatment of obesity the obligation for a treating physician, won't it?
Right. Well, that should have been the obligation for the treating physician all along. Mm-hmm. So by them declaring a disease, it at least codifies the role of the physician in the health care of obesity. And that's good in a general global sense. But it's not going to help any individual, because, hey, before today, we didn't have good diagnoses or treatments, and that's going to be true tomorrow as well. So, you know, in a sense, what it's doing is it's haranguing the physician to actually do something about it. The question is, what's causing it in the first place? Obviously, there are many different diagnoses, but none of them really explain what's happened over the last 30 years. How did the whole world get so obese so fast? And that's where the Western diet comes in. And that's, of course, what my book is about. And, you know, we're trying to fix the inadequacies and the inequities of the Western diet. And I can sum them up in, you know, a couple of words. Lack of fiber, high sugar, high omega-6s, low omega-3s. You know, that's a pretty good smattering of what's going on.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Robert Lustig, who's a pediatric endocrinologist who spent the last 16 years treating childhood obesity and studying the effects of sugar on the central nervous system, metabolism, and disease. He's the director of the Weight Assessment for Teen and Child Health Program at UCSF and a member of the UCSF Institute for Health Policy Studies and a member of the Obesity Task Force on both the Endocrine Society and the Pediatric Endocrine Society. And his latest book is Fat Chance, Beating the Odds Against Sugar, Processed Food, Obesity, and Disease. So what kind of guidelines then are doctors going to have if they're going to if the insurance companies and Medicare are already funding intensive behavioral therapy and putting a lot of money into bariatric surgery and treatment of diabetes, etc.? What about getting to the cause, getting to the root cause, which you've just outlined? I mean, how much education is going to come into that?
Indeed, that is the $64 zillion question. The question is, how much proof do you need? You know, all the food industry, you know, keeps coming down and saying, you know, we don't have the research. We need more research. You know what that is? That's moving the goalposts. We have the research. We actually published a study 3 months ago in the journal Plus One that showed that sugar is the proximate cause of diabetes, irrespective of its calories and irrespective of obesity. It's diabetogenic all by itself, and it's 11 times more potent than total calories in inducing diabetes. So if that's the case, and this is causative, not correlative, then that is the clear way to start dealing with this problem. So to tell the physician, yes, obesity is a disease, and yes, now you're responsible for it, when the food industry has basically changed our environment in such a way as to foment these diseases, is really missing the mark.
Well, already the food industry is, you know, you talk about moving the goalposts. I've seen advertisements now of a housewife buying sugary drinks and saying they don't want big government telling them how what she should be buying. And they've exactly. they've also got these disingenuous ads saying that there's more choice, less calories, less sugar in their soft drinks, but they're still selling basically the same product.
Of course, absolutely. Look, they're all saying, get your hands off my food, except for one thing. They've already been there. The fact is, we don't have the same diet we had 30 years ago because the food industry changed it. Of the 600,000 food items that are currently available in the American grocery store, 80% of them have added sugar, and that's on purpose because the food industry did it because they know when they do it, you buy more. So your food has been adulterated. Your food has been tainted right under your very nose and with your tacit approval. The question is, how come the libertarians aren't mad about that?
Well, good question. And how come the American Medical Association is not tying these two things together? I mean, is this incremental on their part, or do they know it? Do they get it? I mean, it's not exactly a secret.
I'm going to tell you, there are different societies that feel differently about this. The American Heart Association is all over this. They came out in 2009 and said, we need to reduce our total sugar consumption to 150 to 200 calories per day, which is 6 to 9 teaspoons per day. The problem is right now we're at 22 teaspoons of added sugar per day. So they want us to reduce our consumption by two-thirds to three-quarters. On the other hand, the American Diabetes Association, when we came out with our study 3 months ago, said, oh, this wasn't even on our radar. We don't even know if this is so. Maybe this needs some study, but we're not going to endorse it or support it. So, you know, here are two different societies, two different medical groups with very different responses to what's going on in our environment.
Well, we're going to be talking after you, Dr. Robert Lustig, about the vote today in the House on the ag bill that went down because of punitive efforts to stop or cut into the food stamp program mm-hmm. that 50 million Americans depend upon.
Right.
But the sad part of that is that and there's some really, you know, very, very cruel politicians who are beating up on poor people who get $1.50 per meal. That's all they're getting. But unfortunately, when you spend that little amount of money on food, as is necessary for poor people, they yep. tend to buy sugary stuff that gives them the illusion of nourishment and sustenance.
Indeed. The fact is that sugar is not nutrition. Sugar is energy, but there is not one biochemical reaction in your body that requires dietary sugar. So if you don't need it, and you can live perfectly well without it, and it only causes problems. You know what we call that? We call that a defective product.
That's well, when's is. It going to get recalled?
Well, it's going to be quite a while. But the fact of the matter is, sugar meets the same criteria as tobacco and alcohol in terms of ubiquity, that is, you can't get rid of it, toxicity, that is, if you use it, it's bad for you, abuse, which says that if you know it's addictive and causes continued and increased consumption, and finally, with negative impact on society, since Medicare will be broke by the year 2026 due to chronic metabolic disease driven by sugar that we've shown. So the question is sugar something that needs to be brought under control? And if so, who's going to bring it under control? Well, I guarantee you the food industry will put up every obstacle it possibly can on the road, because this is their juggernaut. This is their way that they've been able to increase their dollars over the past 35 to 40 years.
But, of course, you're talking about corporate food here, and isn't there a divide between corporate food and natural food, if you will? There's a movement to have what's called slow food. People are more conscious. But that's amongst more educated and affluent. Again,
absolutely right. That everyone thinks that's elitist. You know, here in San Francisco, you know, we're all into that, but everybody thinks we're nuts. The fact of the matter is, you said it yourself, Ian. This, you know, the poor cannot afford anything else. So basically, they're the ones that demonstrate the worst obesity. They're the ones who demonstrate the worst incidences of chronic metabolic disease. They're the ones chewing through the healthcare dollars greatest. And they're the ones who can least afford this, and they're the ones who are being helped the least by this. And the question is, when are we going to turn that around?
Well, then, just in the last couple of minutes, Dr. Robert Lustig, is there a possibility that this change by the AMA declaring obesity a disease, could it backfire in the sense that you don't want to, you know, the term disease is stigmatizing? And surely people who are obese, as I'm saying, they don't need to be stigmatized anymore, do they, obese
well,
people?
The fact of the matter is that obesity is the last bastion of pejorativeness that we have in our society. They're the last group you can still make fun of, and all you have to do is listen to Jay Leno each night to realize that. The fact is that we need to fix this problem, and it's even more important to realize that a lot of the obese are perfectly fine. They're perfectly normal. They're healthy. I would rather be fat and fit than thin and sick any day. And for us to continue to give the obese a hard time because of their obesity, recognizing that this is biochemically driven. Obesity is a defect of energy deposition, not a defect of energy balance, because a calorie is not a calorie. What kind of calories dictate what your biochemistry does, and what your biochemistry does dictates whether you end up burning it or storing it. And the problem is, our food supply has basically changed our biochemistry. Our environment has changed our biochemistry. And until we change it back, it ain't going to get better.
So we got to start blaming the food suppliers and not those poor obese people you see on television on The Biggest Loser being tortured.
Listen, we have an epidemic of obese six-month-olds. They don't diet and exercise. Are you going to ascribe personal responsibility to them? We have an epidemic of obese newborns. If you look at birth weight around the world, it is up 200 grams over the past 20 years. And when you do DEXA scanning to determine potty composition, turns out that's all fat. So how come newborns are laying down more fat today? The answer, mother's diet. The question is, can you really blame that newborn for already being fat? Well, if you can't blame the newborn for being fat, you know what? You can't blame anybody for it.
Well, Dr. Robert Lustig, I thank you so much for joining us here.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ian. Thank you for having me.
Again, I was speaking then with Dr. Robert Lustig, a pediatric endocrinologist who spent the last 16 years treating childhood obesity and studying the effects of sugar on the central nervous system, metabolism, and disease. He's the director of the Weight Assessment for Teen and Child Health Program at UCSF, and he's a member of the UCSF Institute for Health Policy Studies and a member of the Obesity Task Force of both the Endocrine Society and the Pediatric Endocrine Society. His latest book is Fat Chance, Beating the Odds Against Sugar, Processed Food, Obesity, and Disease. And we're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the defeat of a punitive bill to cut food stamps.
Oh, to live on Sugar Mountain with the barkers and the colored balloons. You can't be 20 on Sugar Mountain. Though you're thinking that you're leaving there too soon, you're leaving there too soon.